The Alabama Crops Report Podcast, your trusted information source for Alabama agriculture.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Alabama Crops Report Podcast. Got in the studio today, Simmer Virk and Amanda Shear. How y'all doing today?
Good.
Doing pretty good.
Good, good. You know, I kind of buried the lead there. We actually have a special guest with us today, Dr. Steve Brown, retired cotton agronomist, current teacher, I guess. Steve, how's it going? Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Scott. Yes, I'm teaching one class, advanced crop science, and I have one of Simmer's students. He missed an assignment because he was harvesting peanuts yesterday with Simmer. So,
if it was thanks for accommodating.
Yeah.
If it was cotton, you would have given him an A for that day.
Could be. And if it was a soybean, I might have flunked him. So.
Well, it's good to have you back. Good to see you. Hope class is going good.
It's fun to interact with students and to challenge them to think about, you know, other than just hear the facts. How do you apply those facts?
Yeah. Well, good. We have missed you on the team, but we are glad that you're able to help bring the students along. So that's good.
Thank you.
And we're happy you couldn't fully stay away, and we were able to get you back on the podcast.
That's right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, so we're again glad to have you. And the reason, you know, because this is a timely topic in a way, Scott and I have a podcast with Blake Linton, and there were some questions that came up about cotton defoliation. And we're like, well, let's get Dr. Brown here. So before we dig into a lot of kind of discussion on different things, I guess I do have a question for you.
Okay.
Because I read it a few times now, and I kind of want to get your opinion on. When we talk about cotton defoliation, there are three options I'm going to say, and you tell us which one it is. Is it more science than art? Is it equally art, equally science? Or is it more art than science? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, there's a lot of science involved without question. And if you do something today, you'd be smarter 10 days or a week to 10 days out looking backwards. Well, I should have tweaked this. I should have tweaked that. So I guess that's the art part. You don't know exactly how the weather's going to turn. Hopefully, you've got a sense, especially if you're well into the defoliation season, of how the crop is responding, as opposed to when you're just starting out. You don't know, are the leaves going to be challenging to get off? Is it going to be hard to open bowls? And then what's the weather going to do in the next 10 days or 2 weeks? So all those probably make it so that it's not an exact recipe, but hopefully a farmer adjusts as he progresses and as he looks back and as he looks forward to the forecast and so forth, and how the crop has responded already to whatever treatments he's applied or his neighbors have applied.
Okay, so option one, two, or three?
In some years, I would say, again, there's always science. Probably it's two and a half, or let's say one and a half. It's probably three parts science and one part art.
Okay.
How about that? Is that fair enough?
Yes. Okay. That's what I was getting at.
Okay.
If you have
a... There's a lot of science there. But the factors, there are always some wiggle room that you're not exactly sure of, and you proceed. And sometimes maybe you overdo just to make sure that you get a consistent response or consistent result.
Okay.
We talked with Blake on the last podcast similarly about, you know, how do you manage insects when weather changes and stuff like that. And I said the same thing. It's kind of, you know, we got these thresholds right that are, you know, they're 3 bugs per 5 row feet. Well, how much is the cotton worth? And that changes it. So it's kind of similar. Yeah, there is a lot of art to this farming that I said in the newsletter a couple months ago that we were using science as the paintbrush with which we make our art. So it takes both for sure. Simmer, I have a question for you before we get started about defoliation type stuff with pickers.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure they're set up right. I have seen multiple pictures, and not just from Alabama, of cotton pickers that are just burnt to the ground. And I don't know how much of that is wiring, how much of that is something to do with, you know, picker friction or something like that. But any thoughts or suggestions for making sure pickers are set up right and when we start picking, we're safe?
I think, yeah, I, there's a lot of reasons that can happen, but some of the most commons I've seen, you know, a lot of times there's something metal or anything, you know, that gets go through the picking. And especially we had one happen many years ago at E.B. Smith where there was a wire flag, you know, that got picked up with the cotton and then they went in the basket and then it started that. So I think the best thing is to make sure that, you know, we're not getting anything but cotton in the picker and keep very careful eye vigilant about, you know, in the field. If you see something, stop the picker and pick it up and that. But there's also a lot of parts in the picker itself that can cause, you know, issues like that. Picker setup and all that, that's why I talk very briefly about that, but John Deere's got this great guidelines on what things to take care of and all that, and I think Cotton Incorporated has some resources on what applicators or growers can do to minimize some of those issues.
Yeah, you know, I just feel like we talk a lot about, you know, harvest safety, and mostly that's focused on, you know, riding down the road, a highway from one field to the next, but certainly there are precautions for safety when we're actually in the field picking too that we need to be thinking about. It's very expensive, obviously, but it's could be cost a lot more than money in the wrong situation there. So I just.
And from a picker, you've got thousands and thousands of moving parts at high rates of speed, and you've got dust, you've got particles that are like that, especially when it's extremely dry, you've got particles that could catch fire if you spark, and then once, if you ever get a fire in the basket or in the roll or in the flow of cotton, it's hard to put out because there's just so much so much there to burn, and even if you put a module up, sometimes the heat can flame up and ruin that module, yeah. And that could be a round roll or a big module, and so hard to put those fires out. Yeah.
Well, let's transition into just get your thoughts on the foliation. So I just looked in the most recent, so today is October the 10th, the most recent crop progress report had us at 20% picked, harvested. So a little bit ahead of schedule for the last 5 years, but we're just kind of starting now, I think, to get into a large percentage of the crop. And up until this point, everybody I've talked to is, hey, same recipe's working really well, but we're getting into cooler nights now. The days are not going to be as warm. Any thoughts there? Does that change your approach?
Yeah, the next 10 days or so, we're going to dip into nighttime temperatures into the 40s, upper 40s in some places, and even to the low 40s, maybe even in central Alabama. I looked on the forecast for Brewton and Headland, and they're not going to be quite as cool. They're going to continue to see some warmer temperatures, but again, when you start seeing low 50s and into the 40s, you tend to think, is crop maturation, is it done? Are we gonna make, if we made all we're gonna make? And that's probably true from the central part north. Maybe in the south they can keep hanging on, but it is, again, it's mid-October, so it's time to get it done in terms of making spraying the crop and trying to get the leaves off and opening bowls. So, yeah, cool weather changes things. One of our premier products is thiodiazuron, or several names. The old name was Drop. You got TDZ is the same as generic. You got various generic forms of that. And temperature-wise, there's some charts that show when you fall below, say, 65 and 60, how different products perform. And so as you fall below that 65-degree mark on cool and nighttime temperatures, you see less activity with that. Having said that, I was in a field earlier this week, and I'm not getting in many cotton fields this time in my present situation, but there was a tremendous amount of regrowth, but it had been sprayed 2 or 3 weeks ago. They'd gotten an abundance of rainfall on that, and so there was a lot of regrowth. So I said, yeah, you got to retreat this. But so that's one product that as we get colder, maybe we opt out or change direction and go and use another combination product. And that product is GenStar. It has a little less susceptibility to temperature. It still includes thiodiazuron, but it also includes diuron, which is a common herbicide. And we've got generic versions of that product. I would say over the years I've seen farmers make their own by using some Drop or TDZ and put their own diuron, and I've my general observation is that never worked quite as good as the formulated product, and it may be the adjuvants in there or something, but it, the commercial product to me always was better than what the farmer did. It also suggests with some of our other herbicide defoliant type products, the phosphates, or you got ET, AIM, and there's several that are in that same category. They're going to need the adjuvant with them, and maybe even you put a crop oil with it. In cooler weather, you're going to get a little better penetration and better performance. That's a little risky when the temperatures are hot. We're well past that today.
So is that also to improve coverage, yes, crop oil and adjuvant for more from the drift side, or?
No, it's really more penetration into the leaf. Yeah, and absorption in the leaves. In fact, you know, again, on the thiazurone type products, addition of a phosphate with that, or even ammonium sulfate, helps absorption and speeds it up. The rain fastness on the products vary. Of course, I don't see any rain in the forecast, so that's not a big issue right now. But the addition of a surfactant or even a crop oil is probably going to enhance activity as we get into cooler weather. Now, some of the products, the PPO type products, AIM and ET, I wrote them down just to make sure. Display, Reviton, and then another product, Sharpen. I don't know that we use much of that, but they'll have specific instructions on the label about which adjuvant you should use, and that should be followed.
Yeah, you mentioned the weather forecast coming up, and I just looked on my phone just to make sure. But yeah, we don't really have any rain in the forecast until probably October 20th, and there's only like a 30% chance of rain. So it sounds like that'll be good news for growers that are putting defoliants out now. But when do you start worrying about when that rain is going to come in terms of kind of days, and when you should kind of apply or hold off for a rain event?
Yeah, good question. I had a conversation, I guess it was last week, with a farmer in not quite North Alabama, but he was had already sprayed some acres and was beginning to harvest, and he said, Helene was coming. At that point, it looked like it was coming right up the border of Alabama and Georgia, and we were going to get significant rainfall. We got a little bit, but we didn't get nearly what our friends to the east got. And so my thought was, with a big rain possibly coming, yeah, I'm going to hold off. I'd rather be out 3 or 4 days at least, maybe 5 days, if I knew a significant rainfall was coming. If it was a half an inch or an inch, I'm less concerned. But again, with a big rain coming, I would hold off several days. But with a 40%, 30% chance of rain, I may be 2 days out and think about it. And again, I may use additional adjuvants to help me get a quick absorption.
You talk about different products, you know, as temperature changes and all that. Are there, I guess, also considerations for growers? They may already have a stock of the same product, and that changing maybe rates and stuff to get a better defoliation when the temperature changes.
The standard approach is a three-way combination that's usually going to be in. This is a typical. It's going to be a phosphate product, a TDZ product, and then a bowl opener, and so we generally see the need for a little higher rates of some of those as temperature cools. If you get too high rates when it's hot, you get the potential of leaf sticking and more trash in the sample. So you can do a lot of things with harvest aid products. The first thing we think about is defoliation, and really probably should break that down into mature leaves, and then secondly, juvenile foliage. Then third point would be regrowth suppression. And the fourth point, a very important point, is bowl opening. And a fifth one, which we probably don't care much about, or we should care about, is, can you not see my hand? That's fine.
I was just confirming.
Is weed control, but we really don't do much of that at harvest time. And I don't think that's really the target. The other four are regrowth in this kind of climate is probably, that threat is reduced. We've got extended dry weather in our immediate past and in our distant forecast. So that's less of an issue for us. However, when we were a little earlier in the season and we got a big rain from this and that, golly, that's where you, and we'd come off a very dry season, that's where you get tremendous regrowth. And so that's why I've recommended to this fellow, hey, you got to go back and retreat that. So so regrowth is maybe less important, but one point that we always should remember on the defoliation approach, and I would say harvest aid is probably a better term, but is combinations do a much more consistent job than a single product alone. Even the best product at the highest rate, we're going to get better results if we mix different products. Again, your whether it's your bowl opener plus this or plus that, again, they're going to perform better in combination than singly.
You keep mentioning bowl openers. So I talked with a guy yesterday that, you know, we all know where prices are right now and what we think our yield potential is going to be. But a lot of folks are picking the bottom bowls that they're not used to. Where do you call, hey, we don't need to chase those upper bowls, we need to go ahead and get what we got? Or how long out do you wait for that? I know it probably varies year to year, but.
Well, in some ways, that's a timing question. When do we make our defoliation application? And part of it is your responsibility. I'm going to be looking at those upper bowls, and I'm going to be cutting some of them, and I'm going to see if I got stink bug damage that you let escape. So,
not me.
So in one sense, that's an issue. I may have some bowls. Are they damaged? And then size-wise, I'm going to look at them. And with this kind of persisting dry weather, I just don't know how much we're going to make in that upper canopy.
Yeah.
So we're not – probably from central to north Alabama – maturation, and we're probably about made what we're going to make. Maybe we can make some more further south, but I wouldn't be holding up my breath. I wouldn't be delaying my picking operation. I'd go ahead and, if I could, I'd be defoliating most of what we have. I don't know what the frost date is going to be. Nobody knows that. In our part of the world, it should be around the 1st of November. I've seen years in the southern extremes where it could be Christmas. We don't know what's going to happen. But now, if a frost was on the forecast, I'd want to be 4 or 5 days out ahead of that. I remember having calls, and even when I was a graduate student here at Auburn, there was a farm nearby, and it was a beautiful field, but he needed to defoliate, needed to open some bowls. Well, the frost was coming, the freeze was coming, and in less than 48 hours, I said, it's too late. You need several days to go ahead and get the crop moving in that direction to get the bowl opener type products working. The bowl opener is, of course, of Ethafon, or what we used to call Prep. And then Finish is sort of a souped up version. I think it is a premium product and probably priced accordingly. It probably works a little faster. but you can probably do the same thing if you tweak the rate of the standard Ethafon products. But again, I think Finish is a great product. Sometimes I might not want to spend that money. I especially wouldn't spend that money if I'm going to be opening and ready to pick with Finish at 10 days, but I'm not going to pick it to 15 or 18 days anyway. I could have used the cheaper Ethafon product at a standard rate.
What's your general age bowl that you can expect to open?
Oh, well, to me the telltale final sign is, can I cut through it? Can I saw through, you know, it depends on how sharp your knife
That's
is,
right.
I guess. but when I, if I try to cut through it and it strings out and I begin to see darkening of the seed coats in cross section, that bowl is pretty mature, and I think I can proceed. One of the other standard methods is to count, assuming that's a first position bowl. If I've got a first position cracked or open bowl below that, I should be mature 4 or possibly 5 cracked bowls, first position bowls above that. So 4 is probably a very good number. But again, I really like the knife technique to confirm. Generally, what I see is that bowl ready to go, and that to me is the best number. And clearly, you have differences across the field, but you got to look at the big picture there. In our current weather forecast, I hate to say this because I think people ought to get in a hurry, and they don't. There's not a big threat of weather that's going to take our crop. Now, had Milton turned north, we might be crying. And I know in Georgia they're crying. They've lost 30-40% of their crop because of Helene. So, you know, maybe I could wait a little longer. But again, let's get this crop out it done.
We talked on the podcast with Blake about how many last 4 years we've ridden by fields with you, and you say, "Go get them! What are you doing?"
I mean,
and now you're saying, "Well, hold off."
I would rather. I guess I've driven over fields. I wish where is the picker. And I wish I had a big vacuum cleaner could suck it all up because it's ready and waiting. Where are you? Let's get with it. Yeah. So I don't think, and this is probably, this is maybe too gross of a criticism, but our peanut cotton farmers, they're going to give priority to peanuts. And sometimes the cotton's sitting out there and suffering, and we're losing weight and color and so forth because we're waiting. I would have hoped that the round roll picker would have cured that, and it hadn't done enough, in my opinion. That's not the picker's fault. It's the operation's fault. Let's get it done. Let's get the crop in. I think where you're from in the Mid-South, I think they have a greater sense of urgency, and they get after it, and they get it out much quicker. And I think part of that is the back door that they know once it starts raining on some of their heavier soils, all they can do is duck hunt and deer hunt.
Yeah.
And we kind of string it out a little farther than I wish was the case.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember last year I drove by a few fields, like 1 week they looked beautiful, ready to go. And I'm like, why haven't they started yet? And then the following week we had some rain. And then I went by like a little bit after that and a bunch of hard lock. And it's just sad to see. And unfortunately, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what it's going to do. And the tropics are still active. So I think still getting on that if your crop is ready is still the best bet.
I did talk to a farmer maybe yesterday who had already picked 1,000 acres. So I was proud of that.
Yeah,
Get it done. Get it in. My daddy was a hurry up kind of person. And you know, sometimes if you stalled in your meal, he'd be taking your plate before you. Oh, whoa, I'm not finished with that. So, but
that's just the dad tax. You start eating those dino nuggets off their plate if they don't eat them.
I just urgency. And again, there's so many things going on in harvest, and there's nothing more aggravating to work on than a cotton picker. There's so many moving parts, and they're hard to get to, and they're expensive, and knuckle busters, and all that. And so. And labor and so many things challenge us. It's easy to talk about it from the chair, from the office and the pickup.
From your ivory tower.
Yeah, ivory tower,
I've seen already especially last 2 or 3 days on Twitter, so many pictures of pickers down waiting on a part or something.
Yeah. It hurts. And again, it's an expensive problem. And time is also a significant expense in this whole deal too. So,
yeah. So one thing you said, which I've kind of started to, you know, because we were talking about the cotton prices and everything, and I feel like when you're on the back end of the crop, you know, especially defoliation, all that, you already know what type of inputs you have, all that, and the prices are not looking so good. Is there something like economical defoliation in a way where you don't want to spend a bunch of money just trying to get the cotton that's in there? Now you know where you sit in that season, right?
Yeah, great question. I participated in the past years on the Mid-South Defoliation Guide, and I just took a quick gander at it, and I see some of the rates that are recommended there. For example, most of the cool weather rates on Ethafon or Finish are at 32 ounces or a quart per acre. Interestingly, in the old days, we used a pint to a pint and a half, and 1.1 and 2/3 pints was a high rate. Now, I know some farmers use them well beyond 2 pints. But so I think we might could, in a lot of situations, the cotton I've driven by, you got cotton that's pretty well open. I still like the Ethafon product in the mix because of it's a good defoliant in addition to opening bowls. So maybe if we have a crop like that, we might could cut back even to a pint of Ethafon. And another product, whether that's the phosphate, whether that's one of the PPO products, AIM or ET or that list, that might be a cheap way to get by. Now, having said that, I hate to say the art part of this, but there's nothing, if you do a poor job and you have to retreat, you've cost yourself time and money. Mm-hmm. And so that's why people sometimes do a little more than just to make sure. I also would add to that questionable part of it is, how good is good enough? Mm-hmm. You know, you've got a little bit of green left on. Should you pick it? Should you spray it again? That's a judgment call, but you don't want a green stained cotton. But it doesn't have to be perfect to escape those penalties. So that's you know, maybe that's a budget way. Again, a pint and a half or no more of that, of the Ethafon or finish type product, and then an additional product that's going to give me some mature leaf removal. That may be a cheap way to escape, but again, you'll be smarter a week later as you look back and see how good a job that did.
I have a follow-up on that, because I didn't know. Worked in Georgia in cotton fields, started learning a little bit of the agronomy side and all that. You know, being an engineer, you don't get exposed to a lot of that in your college.
What's an engineer?
I don't know. That in Mississippi.
Let me protest. I think schools need to be committed to training ag engineers. Thank you for your profession.
Yeah. That they actually, it's very common to have two pass applications in Mississippi or somewhere there, because we're doing multi-state trial and they keep bringing this two pass thing. And I'm like, what is that? But I've also seen growers in Georgia in a way where they had to go back and do the second pass. How much percent of the growers you think in our state get into situations like that every year?
I would say there are some people committed to a two-way approach. And if you do so, your level of consistency is going to be extremely high. You're going to almost get a perfect job every time. There's a lot of ways, a lot of products, a lot of mixes you can use at application one and application two, and the likelihood of perfect results are going to be near 100%, you know, 95% better. So you're going to see really good results. My preference is, hey, let's go for it once, and in that rare situation, we'll touch it up. So I would say in Alabama, and this is wild guess, there may be 5% or so of the folks that are committed to two-way. And the touch-up is sort of, a judgment call on the backside. We may have a little more regrowth, or we have a year or two that these bowls are hard to open and we retreat with Ethafon. I think that's not that common, especially if we have good stink bug control. So my approach is, hey, let's go one application and be done with it. In really good irrigated cotton, really rank cotton with real good yield potential, I can accept that argument. I still would try to do it once and just touch it up if necessary, and that would be that would be the exception rather than common.
Is there anything to it also over there where they plant earlier, they do everything earlier, so it's a little bit different time of the year when they're starting defoliation, maybe more potential for regrowth?
Are you talking about in the Delta?
In the Delta.
Yeah, well, they're going to have heavier soils, as they would call them, ice cream soils. Yeah. So they got a lot of grow power underneath those, so they would have a big canopy. So they'd be more committed to that, and that's probably also their traditional approach. We're cotton farmers.
That's
we're
right.
Going to make two applications. So,
put it on a bed, too.
Oh, yeah. Yes, and they're well irrigated throughout much of the season. The two-way approach is, again, almost foolproof, and you could do some things to remove leaves, begin to open bowls, and then follow that up as needed with a very aggressive bowl opening application. And again, your likelihood of great success is going to be 95% or better. The one point that really favors that is if you have a dense canopy, the Ethafon products, they're not, what's the word I'm looking for? They're not systemic within the plant. So you need to cover the bowl, you need to spray the bowl. And so when you've got some foliage removed and you've got more access to the bowl, that's why you get greater consistency there in terms of bowl opening. But again, that's their culture, their climate, and the crop they grow. We probably in most places grow a less dense canopy than they do most places. Now that's not an absolute statement, but.
Well, I think we're getting close to our time here, but last thing, I guess, because something, again, that came up our last episode is the way we have our agriculture in Alabama. There's, you know, different regions, and you kind of even mentioned about central. If I was in central or south, I would do this. How would your recommendation change for cotton growers in North Alabama versus Central Alabama versus South Alabama, looking at the weather or other considerations?
In North Alabama, I think it's done. Get, you know, you got what you're gonna make. Let's get it sprayed. Let's get it open. Let's get it picked. And I think the mentality there is they're committed to that approach a little more so as we move further south. In Central, it's probably done here. We're not going to see quite as cooler temperatures in Central and South. So I still think as we get to the middle of October and the next week or so beyond that, we've about put on whatever bowls that really are meaningful. And as maybe pertaining to an earlier question, in that upper canopy, those bowls may contribute 5% of the yield, and we risk those, waiting on those to endanger the rest of the crop. So again, I'm almost done in Central and maybe another week or so in the South, and then I'm done and hey, let's get it done. Let's get it sprayed, let's get it out.
Well, Simmer, we'll end there with a quote from Dr. Brown. Go get them.
Go get them. Let's get it in the barn, in the bin, in the gin.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Steve, we appreciate your time today. Simmer, Amanda enjoyed it. As always, if any of us can ever be of any help, please don't hesitate to reach out and let us know.
The Alabama Crops Report is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.